Good afternoon. It is August 29th, 2023, 1:02 p.m. I am Randy Christman, Chair of the Public Service Commission, joined by Commissioners Sherry Haugen-Hoffert and Julie Fedorchak. And this is an informal hearing for Otter Tail case number PU-23-228. And this is requesting a Certificate of Public Convenience and Necessity for a 115 kV transmission line in northeast North Dakota. I don't have any other opening comments. Do either of you?
I don't.
Okay, we'll go, just go around the room and state everyone's name and position for the recording record.
I don't have any opening comments, Commissioner.
Brian Johnson, staff.
Jason Myers, Otter Tail Power Company.
Jason, can you guys state your title, too?
My title is Manager, Transmission Project Development.
Thank you.
I'm Lisa McFarland. I'm an Associate General Counsel for Otter Tail Power Company.
I'm Shauna Lieber. I'm the Manager for Land Rights and Survey at Otter Tail Power.
Chris Hansen, PSC staff.
Victor Shook, PSC staff.
Okay, this is an informal hearing. I'm going to emphasize again, it involves only undisputed facts. If any disputed facts come up, we'll have to issue a notice of hearing and deal with that in a more formal process. Staff, did you have anything you wanted to throw out at the beginning before we start? Normally, we start with the company, but was there anything at the top of it that you wanted to highlight?
I'll wait until we get into the SHPO stuff a little bit later to kind of address our thoughts on that topic.
Okay. Whoever's going to take the lead, go right ahead.
Can I say something first, though? As a portfolio holder, I had the opportunity to work with Chris on this, and I want to say thank you from the very beginning on being responsive to our questions, dating all the way back to June, and the communication on getting that we wanted an informal hearing, and you were very responsive, saying the need, why we pushed this up. So it was very great communication, and I'm glad we could get it scheduled early to meet some of your needs based on the project. So I want to say thank you for those who are responsible for communicating with Chris, getting back to me on that. So thank you again.
I return those compliments. Chris has been great to work with, and he only hung up on me once. In the process, so I appreciate his responsiveness to me.
Not shocking. Good job, Chris.
Okay.
I learned you don't defend yourself.
I'll go ahead and start then, and quickly turn it over to Jason to talk about some of the project need. So, as Mr. Christmas noted, we are here today for an application for a CPCN. And Otter Tail, with this new 115 kV substation and 6 miles of line, does intend to add to our system, which I think is what triggers the statutory requirement for CPCN here. It will be a new build substation in Walsh County, and then almost all of the transmission line through Grand Forks County. And in support of this application, what we filed on the docket, we have an application, a supplemental application, a financial statement, and some correspondence with SHPO, if you care to revisit that. Can you advance? Do I need to advance, or do you have a clicker for me?
I could, or if you want to do anything, you can click.
Yeah, would you please, Jason? Oh, I had a 50-50 shot. I'm going the right way, and I did. Okay. So the fact it's sort of a five-factor test for consideration of a CPCN, and that's what Otter Tail is going to focus on in our informal hearing presentation today. Of course, we'll take any questions you have along the way, so don't hesitate to stop us. But we will go ahead and start with the need for service, and at the next slide. Jason, you
want to
start with project background?
Sure. Thanks, Lisa, and thanks for having us here this afternoon. As we mentioned earlier, my name is Jason Myers. I'm the Manager of Transmission Project Development at Otter Tail Power Company. On our tail end, Minn Kota Power Cooperative have an integrated transmission system, and today we're going to talk about an area of the transmission system that's encompassing both northeast South Dakota and northwestern Minnesota. And when you consider this area on a map, it's generally from the North Dakota communities, Drayton, Grafton, down to Ardoch, and then as you head east into Minnesota, the eastern edge of this area is bounded by Greenbush, Thief River Falls, and Plummer. Otter Tail and Minn Kota have been studying the transmission system for several years in this area, and we have identified that our forecasted load levels are expected to surpass the capability of the existing transmission system in the near future, and we need to take action by building some additional facilities to increase the capability of today's system.
Jason, can I ask you a question? As you go through your presentation, do you guys want questions you go through?
Yep. Yeah. Okay. Interrupt at any time, please.
Okay. I'm going to ask a question on the project need, and it was on something you submitted, that you did a study on that, and it talked about the current transmission system supporting this area consists of long transmission lines between sources and then more frequent extended outages due to lightning strikes and storms. Understand that. I totally understand that. Then you go on to say, power quality is also a concern under some configurations limiting operation flexibility. Can you explain that statement to me, what you mean by power quality?
Sure. Yep. Yeah, maybe I'll have Lisa flip to the next slide to kind of help set the stage here with the transmission map. No, that's perfect. That's a perfect lead-in. When we talk about power quality concerns, really we're talking about making sure we have adequate voltage for customers so that their equipment operates appropriately. We want to make sure that we are not overloading transmission lines. We want to make sure that we're not having low voltages on the system. So power quality concerns are really focused on making sure we maintain a reliable transmission system.
Okay.
That question is a great lead into this particular slide here. Did want to just level set with everyone on a quick transmission map here on the right-hand side of this slide. As you look at this particular area, I'll just orientate everyone to the map here. The black lines you see throughout this map are 115 kV facilities. Those are served by 230 kV facilities shown in blue, as well as 345 kV facilities shown in red. The large amount of customers in this area are served off of the 115 kV network. And the key sources into this 115 network are the 230 kV sources, starting in the upper left-hand corner with Drayton. That's one of the 230 kV sources. As we move down the map, there's another 230 kV source near Grand Forks, marked on this substation near Falconer. And then the last 230 kV source currently existing into this load pocket is on the lower right-hand corner in Winger, Minnesota. Those three 230 kV sources are the key to supporting this 115 kV network. Again, as we perform these transmission planning studies, we've identified that an outage of one of these 230 kV sources can cause reliability concerns, power quality concerns, and as I mentioned earlier, this is relating to low voltage concerns or overloaded facilities. And as we also look at system conditions where we look at a prior outage due to a maintenance concern or a maintenance outage and then look at that next contingency, these reliability concerns are further exacerbated. We see more widespread problems and they're more severe. To address these reliability concerns, we have done extensive studies, and working with Minn Kota and coordinating with MISO, we've developed a phased transmission plan, which we show here on this particular slide. And this phased transmission plan has really been designed around making sure that we can grow the system capability with the customer growth in the area. We've started this phased transmission plan back in 2019 with the implementation of capacitor banks. And we've proceeded down the path of making incremental system enhancements, and now we're up to a point in time where we need to implement phase five of this transmission plan, which involves a new 230 kV source into this 115 kV network.
Where's your most population growth? When you talk about growth, in what area are you looking at?
Excellent question. This is a pretty large, expansive area when you consider the geographic footprint. Some of the larger communities in this particular load pocket include Thief River Falls, Crookston, and there's also some Enbridge pumping stations within this load pocket as well. Those are the key our larger load centers in this area. All right, so the phase five of the transmission build-out is the new 230 kV source at Lake Ardoch. The project itself contains three separate and distinct components. We have both endpoints included, the Lake Ardoch 231 15 kV substation, which Minn Kota is developing. And then we also have the Oslo switching station that Otter Tail will be developing, as well as the 115 kV line that connects those two endpoints. Today's focus, of course, for the CPCN application are those pieces of this project that Otter Tail is responsible for, which is the Oslo switching station and that new 6 mile 115 kV line.
Can I just back you up real quick? I just wanted some clarification. So back to your, I forget what slide it was, that had the six phases listed.
Yep.
So under phase three, you were replacing some structures on the Winger and a Plumber 115 kV line, but then phase six is a new Winger to Plumber. So is that intended to be a replacement or an additional 115?
Good question, Victor. It's a phase six is a new transmission line.
Okay.
That would be added in addition to the existing Winger Plumber 115 line.
Okay. So just for more so redundancy, or for is it, or do you need the additional capacity there?
Yep. The current phase three project included raising structures to get some additional clearance so that we could increase the rating of that facility. The phase six project is actually adding another transmission path to help with some redundancy.
Okay. Good. Thank you.
Sir Jason.
Go ahead.
Yours is a follow-up to that.
Kind of similar. I was going the other way,
yep.
Back to number four. The 2023, is that in service, or you expect it will be yet in 2023?
The project is currently underway, and we expect it will be in service before the end of 2023.
So on the map, on page 5, is it safe to assume then this substation is going right there by Oslo? Is that where it would be added?
That's correct.
And there'll be a red line someplace, or no? Just
nope. There is.
I mean a blue?
We'll see it on a future map, but generally okay. What's going to happen with this project is there'll be a new dot at Lake Ardoch along the 230 kV line that heads on the North Dakota side of the border. That dot will represent a new 231 15 kV substation.
Oh, it's in the north.
And then there'll be a 115 kV line from that new dot over to the Oslo substation.
All right. And you've got that map in here.
Correct.
It's okay.
A little bit different format, but I'll clarify that when we get there.
All right.
Commissioner Fedorchek, here's the map I was referring to. Not quite the same format as the previous slide, but what we do show here, starting on the left-hand side, is the existing 230 kV line between Prairie, which is Grand Forks, up to Drayton. And the plan is to tap that 230 kV line with a new substation, Lake Ardoch. Minn Kota is leading this project to build a new 231 15 kV substation. And then from this new 230 kV substation, Otter Tail is leading the construction of a new 6 mile 115 line from this Minn Kota Lake Ardoch substation to our new Oslo 115 kV substation. As you see on the purple line on this particular map, the route of the line is generally going to be heading east, straight east from that Lake Ardoch substation, cross over I-29, and then head north for the last mile or so. 2 miles before we get into the new Oslo switching station.
And where does it cross the river?
It does not cross the river. It's a faint shaded line on this map, just to the right-hand side. We're just on the North Dakota side of the border here.
I see. So you're calling it Oslo, but it's in North Dakota.
That's correct. The substation is in North
Dakota.
Just to
keep us completely confused.
It is confusing.
My uncle lived in Oslo, so I actually know where it is.
Yeah. The substation is on the North Dakota side of the border.
All right.
In honor of all those Scandinavians there?
That's right.
So what happens to the existing substation at Oslo?
Excellent question. Right now, it's currently a junction point of many different transmission lines, and it also has a step-down transformer to a 41.6 kV lower voltage transmission network. That will remain in place to serve that 41.6 kV system, but all of the other network transmission facilities will now come into this new switching station, which will be fully breakered to help reduce exposure and hopefully minimize interruptions for customers for lightning faults, such as we talked earlier. And then there'll be a transmission path from this new switching station to the existing switching station to support that 41.6 kV system.
And they'll be on opposite sides of the river?
Nope, they're going to be right adjacent to one another. And maybe I can...
So that Oslo one that exists, it'll serve that 41.6, that's in North Dakota?
Yes.
Oh, because this map on page 5 kind of makes it look like it would be...
Yes, and I will admit that generic map is a little misleading, but this particular map on slide 8 is much better. And actually, there is a map coming up on slide 11 that's even better.
Okay, before we get to the really good one,
yeah.
So when I look at this one on 8, the red line that comes out of here... goes west and then just a little north and then west again.
Yes.
I don't see anything like that on page 5.
Correct.
So what is that?
Yep. The red line, as I mentioned earlier, is the 41.6 kV network that comes out of Oslo. The map on slide 5 is a MISO representation of the region, and they only include the high voltage facilities.
Got it. Okay, thank you.
You're not the first company that has confused us with maps.
With names, too.
Yeah.
I said, can't we change this to something more North Dakota friendly? And they're very attached to Oslo.
Well, we're very attached to maps.
Yeah.
That was one of my requests for in talking with Chris yesterday, was maps and the keys and the details, because my interpretation yesterday of one thing was totally different than... I'm like, help me, because I'm not reading this right.
I think instead of Oslo, we should rename it.
I was.
Yes.
Daryl.
The substation, because there was a substation there, the new substation is next to the old substation.
So I was.
You were correct.
Yeah.
And that's recorded, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
So slide 9 is just a wrap-up here of the need story for this project. The 115 kV facilities that are in our CPCN application are an integral part of a joint transmission plan that we're developing with Minn Kota in coordination with MISO. These facilities are needed to maintain reliability, and this is going to support both customers in Northeast North Dakota as well as Northwest Minnesota. And these facilities were approved by MISO through their annual planning process back in 2019. Wrapping up the need slides here, I'll turn it over to Shauna next to talk about the status of the project efforts to date.
Can I ask you one more question?
Certainly. Yep.
I get it, all the need for reliability and all that, and MISO approved, but sitting in so many meetings, we hear all the congestion with transmission and all that. How does this help in any way with any of that congestion, and if so, how?
Good question. 115 kV facilities are going to be more of a localized benefit in nature. So generally speaking, this type of project is going to be more so for load serving to serve customers within the local area. Congestion benefits are generally going to be seen for higher voltage projects, 345 kV and higher. So I don't expect any immediate congestion benefits from a project like this, given that it's driven primarily for supporting the load in the area.
Area. Okay, just clarification. Thank you.
Thank you.
What's the lifespan on, like, a substation? I know there's going to be different components that are going to need to be replaced at different times, but, like, generally before there's got to be some sort of major overhaul, how long does a substation generally last?
Yeah. That's an interesting question, and one that can vary greatly on our maintenance practices. From a book life perspective, we typically see these assets last about 60 to 70 years.
So in your lifetime.
But we are securing land easements for even longer, which Shauna will explain.
Thank you, Lisa. Thank you, Jason. I appreciate your time today. I am the manager of land rights, and I have been working diligently with my staff to secure the land rights that we needed for this project. We secured a 10-acre parcel for the substation, and then there's like a very minor sliver of 0.3 acres that should close tomorrow or the next day. So we should have, that represents full site control for the substation.
So I'm really curious about that when I seen it come up on the screen. Was that two different owners? So you just completed the area? It seems like 10 acres is a lot for a substation to me. And so I can't imagine why you need another third of an acre yet, too.
So with Cloudy Title, there was a, when people purchased the land from somebody else, and when it was platted out, there was a skip of an irregular, like, triangle piece that was discovered when we were doing our title opinion. And so we had to go back to where the chain of title broke and realize that the owner who thought he owned it didn't own that sliver. So it was part of that whole trying to go back to the other, the owner who actually owned the sliver and getting that sale.
And what do you do with a 10-acre substation? You're not going to fence that all in and keep it sprayed and everything, I presume, or?
No. A lot of times, just as a utility practice, obviously the footprint would be much more concise, and we wouldn't, you know, you don't want to gravel and spray down more than what you need. So we do the fence area and then a few feet outside of the fence area for your electrical grounding and, you know, any sort of water control just to make sure everything's okay. But then beyond that, a lot of times it's good to own that little piece outside of your substation for that first takeoff structure, that we have site control of whatever, if we need to guy it, if we need to do anything for that first structure, it's really good to just, we're not irritating landowners all the time with, hey, we need to go in and do some things. So having a buffer is usually helpful just for us to have site control, and then expansion, I mean, you just never know. So sometimes having that area where we can do maintenance or do other things as a practice, it's harder to always just, you know, buy like
sure.
a sliver from somebody as opposed to kind of buying enough for
in the
what
meantime,
we
do you let them farm it or something so
absolutely.
You don't have to keep maintaining it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's so much better for it to be in actual use and somebody deriving value, right? So, absolutely. So with this process, we worked with all of the adjoining landowners to secure 12 easements. They're large landowners in this area, so we lucked out. Worked with them on siting and routing, and we were able to get all of them voluntary and working with us. So we then secured our permits. So there were two permits that we needed for the substation. There's a floodplain development permit and then the building permit for the control house within the substation. And then for the transmission line, we had there were two DOT crossing permits, one for County Road 52 and one for I-29. So those two DOT permits were secured. And then there is a railroad directly south of this Oslo substation, and we're in the process of that. Well, railroads take a minute to grant the permit, but we or the crossing, but we don't expect there to be any issues with that right now. So with that, if you'll go to the next slide. Thank you. This is the project route. It's a little bit different of a map, but it's trying to show the 93 structures that we have planned for this project. So if you look at this Oslo, this actually shows what you were thinking of with the substation, like the existing piece and then the extra that we're purchasing outside of that. You can see in the upper right-hand corner. And then the kind of that blob that goes east and west directly south of the substation there, that is the railroad crossing. And then we head south on the side of that road, and then we cross over, which is to your left. And then the other yellowish blob is I-29. I know it's hard to, those are like different parcels for different permits, so I apologize that it's unclear, but that's the I-29 crossing where it's got an irregular, it goes a little bit north and over because it's interstate, so we have to cross in a specific pattern. And then we are about 5 feet off of the road right-of-way of that county road and go all the way to the west to interconnect into Minn Kota's facility. Mm-hmm. So that is our route. And then...
So if I just may interrupt here just a minute on this particular slide... This particular map is very good at showing the river, which forms the boundary between North Dakota and Minnesota. So you can see that we are on the North Dakota side of the border here. And then Commissioner Christman's earlier question, the existing Oslo substation is just immediately to the right, or in this picture to the east side of the new substation parcel shown in that white box.
That we have a rendition of our timeline where we've worked with the landowners to secure our easements over the summer. And what we would like to do is begin substation grading in the middle of September. We'd like to capitalize on this year's construction season for however long that may last. And then with that in... hopefully by November, assuming that we can get all of our transmission... CPCN, everything that we need for routing and siting on this, we would like to do 11 foundations. There's actually some concrete foundations that we need to install along the I-29 corridor to get enough height and our footers in the substation area. And then whatever we can do with our control house, however much, I don't know, winters, sometimes it's open. Well, not really in Grand Forks, but, you know, sometimes you can eke out, like, 2 more days. We'll see how it goes. And then starting in May, we'd really, you know, that would be the target for the transmission line construction start, but of course, weather dependent. And then get our reclamation going, project close out about September, and get everything energized and on the grid in October is our kind of our construction flow that we're looking for this project.
So on July 28th, we did get a letter filed on the docket requesting a Class 3 survey of the project area. Class 3 survey is the pedestrian survey where you do the desktop, you do the research, and then you also go out and walk where you'll be disturbing the ground, and there's a physical inspection. Otter Tail committed to completing this survey, but we broke it into 2 parts because we had already closed on the substation ground at that point, and it was already mowed. You know, there were no crops there, and the ground was clear. We asked our contractor, Metcalf, to prepare the Class 3 survey report for that parcel first. And just to avoid any confusion, I know Shauna mentioned that we closed on, you know, a 10-acre plot, and then we're purchasing this little pie piece that we're closing on. We did have the survey include the entire future substation parcel.
Lisa, before you keep talking about this, can you tell me how did SHPO know about the project? I'm curious how they got engaged.
I really don't know, other than they had to have been, you know, monitoring the dockets. Do you have any input into that?
So I did confirm nobody within Public Utilities sent this to SHPO. We just received their letter saying they would like to look at this. We've looked at the CPCN law as a what its intention was and whether we've done this in the past. And it's my opinion that this is outside of the scope of the reason for the policy reason, really, for the CPCN.
Yeah.
So if SHPO has their own requirements that you need to go to them, I guess that's fine. We wouldn't get in the middle of that. But we likely, unless the commission feels strongly otherwise, we likely wouldn't include any discussion of SHPO within whatever the order would say for this.
I mean, if you guys want to work with SHPO on it, I personally don't care, but it's definitely outside of what we would normally do in a CPCN, and I'm not at all interested in starting to tangle up CPCN issues with siting issues. So
I appreciate it. I'm sorry.
I can say I'm really glad to hear that, because I thought maybe I was again. I think this is something that the legislature has not assigned to us with the siting law. It's clear that we work with the other agencies, and to the extent possible, meet their desires. And Otter Tail certainly knows that with the wind farm projects that are ongoing right now. But for CPCN, that is not siting, and so I am really reluctant to address it in any orders or anything coming out of here. I don't object to you working with them, but not by our order.
I mean, I actually might object if you're going to charge ratepayers for it. So, I mean, it's not a requirement. It doesn't belong with a CPCN. It's not part of a determination of, whether this is a needed facility to serve your customers with reliable power. And so any environmental considerations need to be driven by a law that SHPO has that requires this. And so if they have that, I don't know. They might be just confused.
And they may be. I guess I'm not sure. I haven't looked extensively into their laws and rules as they pertain to this kind of thing. I mean, if they have their own, that's fine.
So let me give a little more background, and I'll help you understand why we've arrived where we are right now. When SHPO made the request, my response was exactly the same as yours. It's just why are we getting this? The timeline's a little tight here. We filed the CPCN as we're securing up the land rights process. So there's a sweet spot for filing it. I can't come in and show you I have no land rights, so I couldn't have filed earlier. But now we're starting to push up against construction season at the end of this year, and we do need to make some progress. So when the SHPO request comes in, I had a very limited amount of time to figure out what to do with it and what was the best way to respond, because my practice experience is the same as yours, which is I'm not used to seeing this. So I wasn't getting I think maybe we were all a little unsure what to do with this. So I looked into what it would cost to cooperate with them, on this request, and it was very affordable. In terms of, the project budget was very affordable. We could get a contractor out there in a very quick time frame. And I just decided to move ahead because I didn't know that we would at that point, I didn't know that we would have an informal hearing and a chance to speak in front of you, and I also didn't know when we would be on the docket to get the CPCN approval. So keeping my construction, our construction schedule in mind, I was really just trying to see if there was a way to make everyone happy here. I have no problem taking your direction for future CPCNs. Trust me, we'll be quite relieved to hear that, but just for posterity, No, I did bring the report that we submitted to SHPO on August 15th for the substation ground. Now, keep in mind, everything along this route, including the substation ground, is already 100% previously disturbed. It's all been, you know, farm ground. So there's no new, really new ground that we're breaking. And this report went to SHPO on August 15th for the substation plot by Metcalf. It's recommending no findings of cultural significance. And then the last paper that I have attached here is a letter from, I'm quite sure Lorna Mettinger wrote it, but it's from SHPO, just acknowledging receipt of this report and telling us that they will get back to us within 30 days.
So how much did the Metcalf report cost?
For both phases of the survey, I think it was $8,000. Or it's going to be approximately $8,000.
Okay, well, someone ought to communicate to SHPO about this. I mean, we probably should, and maybe you should too, just like this isn't part of the CPC and process. So
yeah, I'll talk to Lorna.
See what they say from there, and then, I mean, know what would require you to wait for them. I'm not sure. That would be a question for them to answer.
Thank you for the direction. Okay, unless there are any more questions, we won't spend any more time on this.
Is there any areas that are outside of a pre-existing plowed agricultural field or ditch right-of-ways?
No, sir.
Okay, I didn't think so, but surprised they didn't find something.
So I did, in my efforts to push back on SHPO on this in phone conversation, I did say, you know, what are you looking for here? And her response to me was that where we were digging footings and perhaps placing structures down a bit deeper, that this was an area of interest to them. So I guess they had considered the area. It wasn't just a random, Otter Tail's lucky today sort of conversation.
Well, I mean, they just need to understand that the 115 lines are not jurisdictional and don't require siting. So if they want to change that, they'll have to go talk to some legislators.
Thank you.
Unless they have some broader jurisdiction over everything. And I'm not sure.
That's what I'm not sure
yeah.
of.
Yeah, I don't know if there's anything on their guidelines on their website.
Right.
And how they reference it on what they've established is that. So.
Well, right. And guidelines is one thing, but it has to be in the law.
Right.
But I know they have administrative rules because we got into those a little bit for those wind farm repowers.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't look to see if they apply elsewhere.
Yeah.
Potentially. But that's really on them. I mean,
right.
So I'll follow up.
Okay. Good.
Clear this up with them for future instances. But.
So I'll wrap up. You know, I mentioned before the CPCN is sort of a five-factor test, but I assure you we would not be here in front of you for this informal hearing if we weren't fit and able to provide the service possibly. This isn't an expansion of our service territory, you know, like a new franchise or acquiring a new customer. This is genuinely adding to the system. One of the things you're supposed to consider is the effect on other public utilities. And I think as Jason explained, you realize that, you know, we are working with another utility. So we expect both of us to be mutually benefited. We expect this to benefit the integrated system. And we are not aware of any requests for hearing or any other comments that have been filed on the docket or the CPCN application. And let's talk about, I know, Chris, you had a question about financials. So I just did want to mention for reminder that you originally approved this project as part of our fall 2022 TCR rider. Looks like a December order in that case. And we, the original project budget, I think that if you go back to that rider, that you'll find is $6.6 million. Unfortunately, I think you're going to see budget increases, and you're going to be asked to review and approve different costs there in the 2023 TCR rider, which I think is planned to be filed around September 15th. While we are still trying to get our hands around final accounting there, I can tell you that some of the cost increases will be due in a large amount to material pricing, supply chain issues, inflation, the continue to affect all aspects of our business. But land rights costs here were also higher than normal. Shauna, I don't know if you know what your deviation was from budget or
for the parcel purchase, it was, I believe, about 40% higher than budget, but the actual, I think it was the siting and grading, like what we had for siting and grading for that substation and what the bids came in, like that was a threefold just for siting and grading. Like some of the, and we did competitive bids. I mean, it has been different to try to budget, you know, in sure. this kind of environment where it's been just unexpected that every bid comes in at, you know, three times what you think you budgeted. So,
what are some of the material supply or supply chain issues that might hold up this project? Or do you
I'm not expecting anything to hold us up. Because we have gotten good at ordering pretty far in advance. For instance, the poles for this new line, I think we have coming to kind of restored at the new substation, kind of way down yard area, will be coming in October. But I know that we have ordered those quite some time ago.
I think everyone's adjusted to having supplies on hand or...
Transformer lead times have been, you know, I've seen them over the last couple of years. You know, we used to talk a year, and now we can be 18 months and longer. So we have gotten a bit sensitive to that. You're right, but just to add on to Shauna's comment, you know, we have seen easements, options, land purchases. We have seen prices trending up all over our service territory, not just in this area, unfortunately. Any other questions about this slide?
This might be a question for our staff as much as you guys, but whoever has thoughts on it. So in terms of, we approved this in the transmission cost recovery rider last December, and now there's a CPCN. Is that normally how this works? Or it's interesting that came after we'd already approved it once.
Yeah, I guess it depends on the project, but okay. It's not uncommon for us to see a project two or three times in various forms.
But if we already said that they can recover it in rates, and now we're coming in and saying that it's prudent?
Well, we're not saying this. The CPCN isn't saying it's prudent. This is about orderly development.
Oh, right.
This isn't
the prudence.
Right. I would say prudence is more so about in the TCR.
Yeah, not ADP. Got it.
Yep.
Getting my acronyms jumbled up.
I had this question in the previous, the pre-filed stuff too. But here you talk, and then it was about, okay, what's the rate impact going to be on so many utility things we go with, impact on the average residential. But here now, you're talking about that, well, it's expected to exceed the $6.6 million, but by how much? By 10% or 50% or 100%? Or what's the current expectation?
So I had hoped to personally come into this here with a little more information, because I suspected you would be curious about that. At last best estimate, we were at approximately $10 million. I do not know what the final budget budget will come in at. Because, as I said, I think we're still working on that. It's painful.
Of the cost, of the final cost, how much of that is the land rights and the purchasing of, or the purchasing of the property and the land rights, roughly?
Less than 500. I'm sorry, I don't have all.
Well,
numbers.
I was just, when you were talking about your cost going like 40%, I was trying to get the sense of how much was material and labor. So if you look at like the land rights and the site prep that you were talking about, that was 2 to 3 times as much. I was just kind of curious how much that was versus the material and the labor to put the building up and put the lines up, just roughly.
So the purchase and the land rights was a few $100,000. Mm-hmm. That's in the.
Okay.
It's the site grading and site preparation mm-hmm. that came in something where I think, and I don't have all the actuals,
sure.
so I don't want to
okay.
misspeak, but it's something in the order of, you know, maybe 450 or 500,000 we had in our estimate, and then, you know, it comes back at 1.9 or 1 point something, you know, the delta on some of those things was, I think, and even the land rights, that was, I think our estimate was on something where we thought the land, you know, the valuation was around $6,000 an acre, and really that is not accurate as far as sales in the area and what we could do. And when you actually do that and you do your comps, you're like, oh.
So 40% of the total cost will be taken on by North Dakota customers. No?
Well, would it be for, so, because this is a joint project with you and Minn Kota, so is Minn Kota covering a portion of that $10
million? Yeah, so as we look at the cost estimates in this particular presentation, I just want to clarify, these are total system costs, so... As we think about the applicability of these costs in the TCR rider, that is correct. 40% of these total costs would go through our North Dakota jurisdiction. To your question, Victor, Otter Tail and Minn Kota are striving to put forward facilities and costs commensurate with our load within this area that's going to benefit from these projects. And our low ratio share in this benefit area is roughly 50-50. And the goal is to try to share in the cost of these additions on a 50-50 low ratio share basis. The actual cost arrangements for this particular project, we do expect will impact the funding of the line itself. We are currently working off of estimates, but the Winger Transformer project that we've talked about a little earlier, that's part of this calculation on this 50-50 balance, as well as Minn Kota's cost at the Lake Ardoch substation, Otter Tail's cost for the Oslo substation. So when they look at all of those factors together, at the end of the day, our goal is to reach a 50-50 responsibility for these new facilities. With the current estimates we're working off of right now, we're expecting Otter Tail to pick up roughly 70% of the cost for this 115 kV line, and Minn Kota would be billed roughly 30% of the cost of this line. Again, in an attempt to balance the cost responsibilities with the load within this benefit area. And all of these costs are going to be subject to actuals and will true up accordingly based on what the projects actually come in at.
Okay.
So how come you don't just take both projects or all the investments combined, divide them 50-50 and call good? Why is there this 70 on this one, 30 on that one, that type of thing?
There's several factors that went into that. And part of it comes down to incumbent ownership at these particular substations. Like, for example, at the Winger substation, as we look to add the second transformer, Otter Tail owns the 115 kV bus, Minn Kota owns the 230 kV bus. So as we look to divide responsibilities at that substation, Minn Kota will work on their facilities, Otter Tail will work on our facilities. So we have some inherent cost sharing for a single project just because of the incumbent ownership already on the system. So that's one factor that goes into why we're seeing portions of these projects being split between each party. The second factor, I think, comes in from just the efficiencies of having one party lead the project. For this particular 115 kV line, it's much more efficient for Otter Tail to lead the permitting and construction of the line and basically settle up with Minn Kota through the construction process rather than coordinate and try to make sure everything is matching up from a schedule and a schedule perspective.
Yeah, that I get all that. It seems like it's still just look at the investment overall and divide it in half.
You would still need to figure out ownership. You know, so somebody has to be responsible for a line. So,
right.
For like ongoing maintenance and repairs and
yep.
just operations.
Seems like that's already sort of established.
Sure.
It's just the cost sharing that, you know, the cost allocation could be divided.
Julia, is what you're saying is if you had this list of all these projects and you knew you were going to share cost 50-50, why didn't you just say we're splitting everything 50-50 from the get-go?
For the cost. And
right.
like you own this, you own that, you know, and
right.
you're maintaining and all that stays as designed.
Right.
But,
I know. So you're saying,
but,
yeah.
Anyway, I guess somebody's looking out to make sure that it ends up 50-50. It seems more complicated
yeah.
this way.
As Lisa mentioned earlier, I think the price volatility with the supply chain challenges right now make it difficult to pre-assume arrangements as we go into these projects. And as we look at adding on to our existing infrastructure, like at the substations, we want to make sure we integrate our own design standards from a maintenance perspective so we can hopefully continue to capture those efficiencies.
Yeah. So just to be clear about the cost, if you're saying it's about $10 million, the system costs, is that after Minn Kota's share, or that's the part that for this one North Dakota will, or Otter Tail will pay 70% of that, and then Minn Kota will pay 30% of that $10
million? Yeah, just a quick clarification. The $10 million estimate, I believe, is the combination of both the Oslo switch station and the 115 line. It's just the 115 kV line that we would be looking at breaking out separately between Otter Tail and Minn Kota.
I see. Okay, so otherwise the substation is 100%.
Correct.
So then we're 40% of that. North Dakota is.
Correct.
Yep.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
And that takes us to the end. We respectfully request commission enter an order issuing the CPCN for the project.
Ryan or Chris or Victor, do you have any questions?
I did have an error on this slide. I said cost recovery is not required in South Dakota, and that was supposed to be cost recovery was already obtained in South Dakota.
Oh,
I'm sorry for that typo. I did not mean to be misleading.
It's kind of right. You no longer need it. You
already
got it.
Yeah, thank you.
What's your time? What are we looking at for timing on this?
I have to see when I actually took my notes off when the notice expires on here, but it should be starting.
I think it already expired.
Yeah.
I think
I was
August 20th.
What's your plan to put
August
this on?
25th.
Yeah. As I recall, I was thinking that if we came through this and everything was positive, I had added in for the September 6th. In fact, you and I talked about this. That's right. I was looking to add it to the 6th so that you would have all the approvals and everything before you start breaking ground and everything. You didn't have to have that hanging over your head. So that was the plan. The notice expired here in August. So.
Yeah, we talked about that.
Yeah.
Because of the 25th and the timeline, looking at your timeline, that's why.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for everyone being flexible and having this informal today so we could meet that timeline with the goal of September 6th. That's our goal.
No, thank you. Our substation construction manager is going to be very excited.
We're keeping him from a brain.
Yeah.
I will just say, and I'm going to be doing more research. I don't know how other companies are doing things, or what can be done to lock in prices on supplies and stuff, but it seems to me, I mean, you've been working on this a long time. You've got the land easements, you've purchased land, except for the little snafu with the sliver, done a lot of work, and still don't have the prices locked in on these supplies. And I don't know, I guess we think of public convenience and necessity. Well, is something necessary, whether it costs $1 million or $1 billion? I mean, at some point it changes. And, you know, well, 6.6 million, and then it's maybe 10, but we really don't know. It seems like we should be able to expect more certainty in numbers. And I don't know how to improve that, so I don't have a recommendation, but I just pointed out.
Are you guys able to purchase power poles and different things on contracts so that you have fixed prices? And that can work both ways. When prices drop, you're locked in at a higher rate too. But are there a lot of items to purchase for maintaining structures, substation, things like that, that are able to be bought on contract to kind of hedge some of that price stuff? Or?
To the extent that it's standard equipment, yes. To the extent that these are engineered structures for this specific project, then we get into a little bit of a snafu with trying to pre-order these types of things. So,
I do the most of the transactional work for Otter Tail, and I can just tell you, we have been in unprecedented times for a while. You know, I just reviewed another contract for grading in a substation near Millbank. And our numbers there were much higher than budget. And as Shauna mentioned, this is competitively bid work. So, you know, I hope we all experience some price correction soon. We could be well in 2024 before we observe the effects of that. But, you know, it's trust me, we're experts at stretching a dollar for the benefit of our customers, and it's been challenging.
Anything else in this case? Are there any objections to the evidence being produced? And I'm talking about the recording as well as the handout, the slides becoming a part of the official record?
No.
Okay. So the evidence will become part of the record upon which a decision will be made. Any other matters for the record? Okay, this informal hearing is closed. Thank you.
Thanks, you guys. Thank you.